Hi, everybody. It's we got a very special bonus episode, a history lesson part two for you. This one's not going to be too long, so I've decided to, you know, siphon it off as a bonus episode as opposed to being a regular, you know, canonical numbered episode. But Tyler's here with me, and we're going to talk briefly, I think, about basically our philosophy when it comes to critiquing movies. And this is something that I've wanted to talk about really since like the Bong Joon-ho episode, I think, right? Just because I got so much shit for it. And I know, like, if I know I'm going to continue to get shit, but I also know that I will get more shit if I don't explain myself a little bit. And so I wanted to do an episode where the two of us talk about our philosophy towards filmmaking, towards criticizing films, but then also just a little bit of an understanding of like where we're coming from and what we like and don't like on maybe that sort of like intangible level where I know certainly I have this, and, you know, I'm looking forward to talking to you about it. You know, there are some things where it's like, I'm aware of my foibles. You know, I'm aware that if a movie has a gun in it, there's like a 5% higher chance that I'll like it. You know what I mean? I'm aware that there are things that connect with me and things that don't connect with me that don't necessarily have anything to do with the actual quality of the movie. And I also think that balancing taste and appreciation for craft is like a very, very hard thing about discussing movies. Mm-hmm. And certainly like trying to apply a number ranking to movies, which is always kind of a fool's errand, really. And I sometimes respect the people on Letterboxd who only write a review and don't put a star ranking, but let's be real. Everybody wants the number. That's what people are looking for. They like the cold, hard facts, the numerical values. So, I guess I'll start, Tyler, by asking you, like, what do you look for in a movie? What is the kind of, if you have a sort of a rubric or a heuristic for evaluating movies that has been present in sort of the episodes that we've done so far?
Yeah, I mean, I like the way that you introed all that, because I do think any sort of anytime you're evaluating culture, you know, in any, whether it's music or movies or whatever, like, you're always sort of in this weird thing where there is both objective and subjective, like, realities here, you know? Yes. It is true that some films are objectively better than others. It is also true that every time we consume culture, it's a subjective experience. So, like, it's hard to tease that out, right? But, yeah, I mean, I have my, you know, the way that you said, like, anytime there's a gun, it's like an extra 5% for you. It's like, if there is a mention of communism, even a negative mention of communism, I'm already 5% or 10% more invested and
engaged.
And if it's a positive reference, I mean, that's almost like 20% off the top, but
that tracks. And I will say that, like, I think we've already seen that, like, you are more likely to, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this, but, like, I think the ideology of the movie being something that you, like, identify with in some way plays more of a role in how you rate the movie than I do.
Yeah.
But I will say that it also plays a role for me. Like, I do think that there are fantastic reactionary movies. Like, they exist, but I am less likely to give that type of a movie like a 5 out of 5. I'm more likely to criticize it, to dock it points if it has a rancid ideology, you know? Yeah. And like a good example of that would be like, not too long ago, I watched the Charles Bronson movie Death Wish, which is a fascist movie.
Yeah.
And the thing is that it's kind of good. Like, It goes pretty hard. It's got some good action sequences, and it's more intelligent than and interesting than the later entries in the series would have you believe.
Right.
I still ended up giving it like a 2.5 out of 5.
Right.
Because it was just like the ideology is so rancid.
Yeah.
That I can't like give it more than this.
Yeah.
By the same token, there are also movies where it's like, I agree with everything this movie is saying, but it's presented in such a rote way, or like so stupidly or so poorly constructed, that like I think I weigh that about the same.
Well, that's kind of your Bong Joon-ho. That's kind of the conundrum that got us here in a way.
Yes. Yeah. And I will add, by the way, that like I think ultimately, like other than just like my pissed off like moment where I got mad that Parasite was the highest rated movie on Letterboxd and just gave it a 2.5 out of spite, I think I gave all the Bong Joon-ho movies, my honest ranking was like 3.5 out of 5, which is like not even that low. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah, that's kind of my go-to standard, like, this was a good movie.
Yeah.
But it was just a good movie. Yeah. Score is 3.5 out of 5. And I think being like demanded to give those movies more than that is it's fascist, actually, to demand okay. more than that. All right. But anyways, regardless. Yeah.
So, okay, let me give you my sort of, I thought about this because we've been talking about doing this as an episode or a bonus episode. So
totally.
I've come up with what I think is my sort of basic rubric, which is that I'm looking for three things, basically, and they are, you're right, they are ranked in their importance. So least important to most important, my three things are, is it original?
Sure.
Right. Like I fucking can't stand even a good, even a movie with good politics. If it's a bunch of cliches, like that's not going to land for me. So is it original? But that's the least important. But is it original? Sure. Number two is it entertaining? And it doesn't have to be, that doesn't necessarily mean I have to be like laughing, but am I satisified?
Engaging.
Is it exactly?
There are lots of words you could substitute in.
Totally. Yeah. So that's the second. And that's, more important than it being original, because there are some movies that are pretty standard fare, but if they are entertaining, then I can accept that.
Sure.
And then the most important one, you're right, is does it have something to say? And and I break that into two different categories, which are what is it trying to say and what is it actually saying?
Yes.
Because obviously there are movies that are trying to say one thing but do not realize that they're saying something else.
That I will allow you to explain yourself a little bit more with regards to that in a second. But immediately, I have to ask this question because of how you framed that. How much do you believe in Death of the Author?
It's a good question. Like, you mean basically, like, it doesn't matter who the author is. What matters is the art.
Yeah, like specifically, I think people like Roman Polanski and Woody Allen, like a discussion about that sort of thing is like beyond the scope of this episode. So I don't want to focus on that. That will be a thing that will come up inevitably at some point of like, how do we deal with great art that is made by really, really shitty people?
Yeah.
I'm going to set that aside for a discussion in a later episode. But what I'm talking about is more like, I think the like best example is the movie Fight Club, where it's like, I do not think that movie, I actually think that is a fairly left-wing movie in what it is trying to do, what it is trying to say, what it's trying to do. But there is no denying that the way that it was received and who it was received by has kind of retconned it as a reactionary right-wing manosphere movie.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm basically asking you is like, how much do you consider that in how you approach the material of the movie? Like for you, how willing would you be to like look at a movie like that and say like, I don't care that the wrong people got the wrong message out of this. That's their problem. This is what I think of this movie, versus like what we kind of just discussed in the last episode where I basically was like, look, I understand what this person was trying to do with Matewan, but I don't like that people could get this impression from it.
Yeah. So the thing I would say is, it does influence me, the reaction, the reception, because I think that the reception and who is drawn to it and who likes it and why do they like it does in fact tell us much about the film itself. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think it's an accident. I don't think it's like weird coincidence that Fight Club was taken up by the people that took it up. I think mm-hmm. that Fight Club was a very flawed, like, to the extent that it had, it probably self-identified as being this kind of mm-hmm. left-ish, you know, mm-hmm. jobs suck kind of thing. I think the underlying politics of it were always right-wing, were always sure. fascist. And that's why in the, you know, when the dust settled, those were the types mm-hmm. of people that liked it. So sure. I think like that aspect of it, who takes up the film and who gets what from it, it does influence me precisely because I think like that's actually part of how you suss out the difference mm-hmm. between what it's trying to do and what it's actually doing. Right.
Well, and the great, I would say the movie to compare against Fight Club as an example of like where it doesn't matter to me is The Matrix. Where it's like the fact that a bunch of manosphere alt-right people took the red pill from that start and used it as a term and like identify with that to me says nothing about and I'm not even like a huge Matrix head by any means, but like you know, to for me, for that movie, I am just like, no, that's a bunch of stupid people. There's nothing in the movie. Like, there's nothing in The Matrix that would make you think this is a movie about how women are actually the people who control the world. That's not right. in the text of the movie. That's stupid people latching on to a movie literally made by trans women, maybe about being trans.
This is
that
the
you
thing.
Have turned into like this other thing. So
exactly.
So yeah. So I would say just to piggyback off of what you were saying and explain myself a little bit, like, I have a weird relationship to how the reaction to a movie influences my reaction to it, where I will cop to being dispositionally a contrarian. Like, I try very hard not to let it influence me too much, but I am like, I will cop to being having an instinct to zig where other people zag. If I watch a movie that everyone loves, I'm going to be. And it's not it's not even because really I want to be a contrarian. It's more that when everybody loves a movie, that sets the standard really high. So if, for example, I go and watch Parasite and it's the highest rated movie on Letterboxd, I'm like, okay, well, this better be a perfect movie, you know? And then when I watch it and there's immediate, well, there actually weren't immediately, but like there's things about it that bother me. Those things eat away at me more because I am, I'm bound by the reaction that the movie has gotten, which is why I kind of try my best to actually not know very much about movies going into them, or at least know much about the reception or what people's takes on them are, because I don't like being influenced by that because I know I am influenced by that. And by the same token, I am also more prone to when movies are received poorly, seeing if I can construct some kind of revisionist take about them. And that is less about me actually, you know, wanting to like bad movies and wanting to dislike good movies, so much as it's like an interesting thought exercise for me that I find entertaining. And so what I would say about that is that,
it's fun.
You know, I am always going to be the guy who defends the, it's just who I am as a person. It's the same thing as it's the same reason I root for underdog sports teams. Like, I'm just wired to want to defend things that are unfairly maligned and to want to attack sacred cows. Like, that's just how I am. But having said that, there are tons of examples, tons of instances of like people embracing a fairly reasonably decent movie, like a 3 out of 5 movie, for that is kind of stupid, for its stupidity, that will make me like the movie less. And then by the same token, if a movie is if people dislike a movie for reasons that should make them like it, I will be definitely like 1,000 times more likely to defend it. You know, like say, like say a movie like Avatar or whatever,
right,
where it's like part of the reason that I defend those movies so wholeheartedly is because like, while they do have goofy elements and there are very real valid criticisms that people levy their way, they are ultimately movies that for me are like unambiguously you take the right message away from them, which is like capitalism is bad, colonialism is bad. It's part of the reason I'll always defend James Cameron is like, look, does he make like he just yeah he makes stupid guy Arnold Schwarzenegger movies about how capitalism is bad. And like, are you going to come away feeling super illuminated about why capitalism is bad? No, but like, you know, it's a lot better than watching fucking like Saving Private Ryan or whatever the fuck, right? Yeah. You know?
Right. Well, it's like the flip. It's like the flip of the Ken Loach, Matewan type films where they're really, really invested in, you know, a sophisticated account. And they want you to come away with a socialist, you know, or left perspective, but like the goal here is to give you a sophisticated portrayal of things, whereas James Cameron is not giving you sophistication, but that unsophistication is going to be anti-capitalist.
Yeah, and it lends itself to catharsis in a really entertaining way. I digressed very very far from what we were talking about there a second ago, but. You did mention that you kind of siphon movies off into two camps with regards to ideology. Do you want to like expand on that a little bit more? Yeah.
The thing about that is like there's what a movie's trying to do, and that matters, right? Like I'm trying to think of one that we did that was kind of like an unsatisfying left kind of thing. What have we done that would fit?
Maybe It's a Wonderful Life.
that's maybe a good example.
Maybe
it's
Ready
for
or
me,
Not.
Ready or Not was the one I was thinking of, but in some ways I did like it. Let's do It's a Wonderful Life. That's a good example.
Sure.
Because I trust the goal of it. I think the goal of it was to do something good.
Yes.
And there's clearly many ways in which it's trying to convey a certain thing. And I agree with the thing it's trying to convey.
Yes.
And yet I still felt when all was said and done that it was inadvertently saying something different from what
it
thought
totally
it was trying to do.
Reasonable and totally a criticism that I've levied at movies in the past too. So I would actually say like your outlook on It's a Wonderful Life is probably very similar to my outlook on Matewan. In the sense that like just dispositionally, like each of us might have a different, like we might be sort of more prone to like this type of movie for a variety of different reasons, and thus more likely to just be like, yeah, I could see why people would think that, but like I don't think that, so who cares or whatever. Whereas we come down on like a different side of that coin with the other movie.
Yeah, and I think you know you said right at the start. Mm-hmm. That it seems like I'm more swayed by the politics than you are. And I think that's probably true. It seems that way. I mean, I think we're pretty close, but I think swayed by it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I mean, here's the thing. This is my, if you scrape it all away, here's what I ultimately think about really any kind of pop culture, but certainly like movies and films. It's like, okay, this is how we as a culture talk to each other about life, about the world. This is how we talk about the small things that happen, the big things that happen, the medium-sized things that happen, how we understand ourselves and each other in this world. So what possible value can a thing like that have outside of what it's saying?
Yes.
All of the other stuff matters. Like, you know, if it's done boring, like it's boring and that's going to affect it. If it's if it's cliched, like that's going to affect it. Like there's lots of other things that are going to be the factor. But for me, it really ultimately does boil down to what is this thing saying? Because ultimately the only reason I can think of to engage in culture at all is to be like, well, okay, like why? You know, you make a piece of art. Why? What for what? For what purpose? So that's why I think ultimately I can't get away from you know, and then it like it flows from that, that because I have a particular set of views about the world, which are socialist in nature, I'm gonna like films that have something to say that is pretty close to what I think, or at least is forcing me to, or giving me the opportunity to like think through totally. Things that I think matter, you know, and that are relevant.
What I will say is that it is both the biggest difference between the two of us, and also the biggest, also in a weird way, kind of almost the biggest similarity, is that I would say that the thing that I rate like the highest in terms of what's important to me in a movie is it's similar, but it's not exactly the same. It is not, what is this movie trying to give me? It's, what can I get out of this movie? What can I take from it? Right. And so those are similar things, mm-hmm. because it's like, I can't take a socialist message from a movie that has nothing of that in it,
mm-hmm.
but I can sometimes take it from a movie that maybe isn't intending to do that. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily, like, intention doesn't matter necessarily as much to me. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the way I guess that I'll explain that is, There's a hierarchy, in my opinion, of like how much an art form can be judged objectively. And so from like least to most, I would say like visual art is about as close to being completely subjective as mm-hmm. an art form can be, like a painting mm-hmm. or whatever. Right. And I think there's a reason why. You know, nearly 100 years ago, we're coming up on it, visual art paintings were such a like linchpin of political expression and kind of a weird flashpoint for fascists.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very revealing thing that I think about fascists when they talk about art or relate to art. Because it's the fascist idea of like a good painting is basically like this guy painted a house and it really looks like a house. You know what I mean? Like, and that's like really, really, truly, it shows you how stupid they are. Like, it shows you how, or maybe stupid is the wrong word, but it just shows you how uncurious they are, how uninteresting they are, how dull they are in their viewpoint. It's like, these are people with no internal monologue. No, like, internal struggle. And that's why they like John McNaughton paintings. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do. I have a response to that that you might be interested in. But sure. Maybe you want to finish the thing you're doing.
I'll just finish my thought. Then you can return to that. So whereas, like, on the other side of things, it's like, you know, Jackson Pollock or whatever, where it's like, or even, like, you can get to this point where it's, like, even more abstract, where it's, like, you know, hanging a urinal upside down in a art gallery or something, and you see people, they get mad about it. And they're like, that's not art. Or they're like, anybody could do that. And then on the other side of things, you see people being like, yeah, anybody could, but they didn't. This guy did it. Mm-hmm. Right. And that is that push and pull is really interesting to me, because it's like, sometimes I really land on the, like, I think it was Yoko Ono. She did an exhibit where the exhibit was a big blank wall and everybody got to put one nail in the wall, mm-hmm. and they could choose however they wanted to do it. They could hit it in sideways. They could hit it in only a little bit, you know, or whatever. And it's like, I think that's cool. Like, mm-hmm. Is there a point to it? Like, I don't know, but I think it's cool. Whereas then there are other things where it's like, that's so fucking stupid that someone did that and I hate it. That's mm-hmm. that are very similar. Right. Mm-hmm. So that is kind of, that's kind of at the top of like the, like, in terms of subjectivity, that's near the top. Right under that, just barely scraping it, is music. Because I think you can say a lot of the same things about music. Like, it's easier to judge music on what it's trying to do, because most people, even people that aren't necessarily particularly musically adept, can tell a bad lyric from a good lyric and can tell if someone's like flat or playing out of tune or just can't keep rhythm or whatever. Right. But the thing is that not all music is necessarily trying to be judged on those terms.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like while like a lay person or whatever might be able to tell the difference between, say, like, I don't know, Christina Aguilera and someone trying very hard to and failing to sing like Christina Aguilera at a karaoke bar.
Yeah, yeah.
They might not be able to understand like why people like The Fall or Captain Beefheart or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And then I would say at the bottom of the at the very bottom of the subjectivity rankings is writing, like writing books, writing novels, writing a screenplay, the written word, essentially. That is the easiest to judge on the merit of like, oh, this is bad writing. Like people are able are most able to identify bad writing, and it's still subjective because there are definitely like there's a very stupid type of person who goes, this is not exactly the same as real life, therefore it's stupid. So yeah. There are still lots of people who don't understand how to grade it, but like
yeah
that happens as well. But it's the easiest to judge I think objectively, because there's things like punctuation and like whether the words sound good together and like whether it makes sense, whether you can follow it. And then somewhere in the middle of all of those things is film.
Right.
It's
right,
kind of it's like the confluence of all of those elements where there is like an equal amount of, okay, well, like we kind of know what bad acting is. We know if like the camera work is bad to an extent. We know if the dialogue is bad. But then there's so much left up to the viewer in terms of interpretation. Like, for example, there are movies with bad performances in them that are intentionally bad. And that's where it becomes kind of hard to grade. And so for me, I kind of grade films in that sort of fuzzy space of understanding that, like, there are certain things that I have to account for in terms of quality, but all that also ultimately I am still reacting to it in the same, in much the same way that I would to music, where it's like, look, this sounds dope to me and this doesn't. And like, I don't really owe you an explanation. Like, I don't have to fucking like Radiohead just because everybody likes Radiohead, you know? And like, I'll defend Gob, even though like I know pop punk is not a thing that you know people rate very highly on its artistic merit, but like ultimately on some level it is always just going to be about what appeals to me like aesthetically, you know.
See, it's funny, like I think I agree with most of that, but then I do just fall much further on the side of I need to know what it's trying to say.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's things that aesthetically I do not like that I could like.
Sure.
If I was given an explanation of, or if I had time to parse out what it was about, you know, the Yoko Ono exhibit that you're describing, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm curious. It's, it's original. It's, you know, it's different.
Yes.
And I would be really curious to explore that and try to find out like, What is she trying to communicate with this? Is there something there that she's trying to communicate? And if so, what? And if it's if I sort of in doing that learn that there is something really valuable and important, you know, and interesting that she's trying to convey, and that this is actually a really innovative and engaging way to communicate that thing, then I'm totally in, even though. You know, on the surface, I might not care, you know, a bunch of nails on a wall or whatever.
Sure.
But if it turns out that like, no, she was just fucking high.
And, yeah.
Right.
I totally get that. And that's where that's where like sort of the tension is in trying to figure out how to talk about these things is that where I think the interesting conversation lies is in essentially like, okay, there are people who are explicit about what their intentions are, and that's good. And then there are people who are explicit about what their intentions are, and it's bad, like stupid or wrong or whatever, right? Sometimes it's just stupid, sometimes it's actively like wrong or damaging or whatever. But then there are people who go, I refuse to explain myself about anything. And yeah. I refuse essentially to like accept interpretations. Like I yeah. make stuff and it's, and that, and I make it and it's up to you, like what you take from it. And I'm not going to explain myself. And yeah. like, I do like that for me. I actually really enjoy when I watch a movie and can't figure it out. Or like when I watch a movie and it feels opaque to me, like what the purpose of it is or the point of it is, if it's done well, like if it's a well-made yeah. movie. And I would say like the best example to me of that, that I really, really like is the Coens. I love the Coen brothers. And like mm-hmm. they are, I think their movies are like, not all of them by any means, but like a lot of Coen brothers movies are like very difficult to interpret what they are trying to say, if anything at all, but they are compelling. They are interesting. They suck you in. And, mm-hmm. and that isn't to say like some of them, you know, like Inside Llewyn Davis has a point and mm-hmm. it's a very good one. Burn After Reading has a point and it's a fantastic. I love Burn After Reading. Mm-hmm. And those are some of my favorite Coen brothers movies, but like Barton Fink, that's another one of my favorite Coen brothers movies, and I'm not sure I know what it's trying to say. A Serious yeah. Man is, I'm not sure what it's trying to say, but it's compelling. It's fascinating yeah. to me. And so that is where the tension is. That's where yeah. kind of like I like, as much as I also like, and I'll close on this, like as much as I do like movies that are also very obvious about what they're trying to say, I also really love movies that challenge me over and over again that I can't like explain, that I can't yeah. like, that I cannot like understand fully. And in fact, almost one of the biggest things that can like really like keep a movie with me is when I'm just thinking about it and I can't figure it out, you know?
Yeah, I do. I'm with you there. Mm-hmm. I think for me, though, like, you know, what you're saying about the Coen brothers movies.
Yeah.
If I hadn't already established in my head at some level that like they're often saying interesting things, yes. they often do have interesting things to say, then I wouldn't necessarily be motivated to try to puzzle out the ones that are harder.
Sure.
If I have a suspicion, right? Like if I have a suspicion that this is just some hack that just threw some things together, they don't yeah. fit, they were never meant to fit, then, you know, puzzling it out and parsing it out only to find out that it's just a bunch of like, you know, contradictory, like it's a mess. That's yes. going to be actually really frustrating for me and unsatisfying.
Sure.
I have to have some sense that if I work hard enough on this mess, mm-hmm. I will be able to figure out what is being said, even if the like creator themselves isn't aware of what is being said.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. I want to be able to figure out what is being said. If nothing's being said, then that is what it's saying.
Yeah.
In a sense, if I'm watching a movie and I come to the conclusion that this person has nothing to fucking say, that is what I take away. And I think, well, that's stupid, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. So for me, like, and maybe this is the Maoist piece of me that I can't
sure.
shake.
Yeah.
I need the film to have, or whatever it is, the piece of art, I need to parse out what it's saying. Everything is saying something, include sure. like, you know, including having nothing to say. That is
yes.
communicating something. I need to know what that is. I need to figure out what that is mm-hmm. and then assess it from there. Even, you know, notwithstanding all the other factors we've described. Yeah. Totally. You know, yeah. a film that's entertaining, well-made, you know, the cinematography is excellent, all those kinds of things. Those are all factors, but really it comes down to what is this thing saying? And do I mm-hmm. like what it's saying? And do I appreciate? And is it, you know, whether it's challenging me or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, I need it to have something valuable to say.
Well, yeah. And the other thing too, is like, I saw Barton Fink 7 years ago, probably, and I've seen it once and I haven't watched it again. And there's also yeah. the possibility that like now as an older person, I might watch it and be like, oh, it's about this.
Right.
You know, true. So, but having said that, I do really love when a movie takes me back to being a little kid watching a movie that's a slightly too old for me and not fully yeah. being able to like grasp what it's trying to say. I do kind yeah. of like that now.
Me too. I mean, yeah. I watched the film Atlantique
sure.
A couple of years ago, and I remember having that experience where I was watching it and I was like, man, this is like when you're like too young to watch movies on Showcase.
Yes.
And, you yeah. know, like you're watching them because they're lurid, but like you don't really get it. And you kind of want to get it, but you just can't. Your brain just can't do it.
When I went to Disneyland when I was 8, the in-flight movie was the Royal Tenenbaums. And that will all ultimately always be to me the movie that like when I watch that movie, I just get this like profound sense of nostalgia for like watching it and being so compelled by it as a kid, but just having it being so completely like out of my league in terms of interpretation. And an element of that still sticks with me when I watch it today, where I'm like, yeah, there's interesting things in here where I can't quite like, you know, obviously there's the obvious stuff about it, but then there's also other things that are harder to parse out about it. And so I still really like that movie. You know?
I appreciate those things, but then ultimately, like I'm going to ultimately appreciate or find them frustrating when I get to the end of the puzzle, or at least, you know, get to where I think I'm at the end of the puzzle. And I think I've figured out what is the creator of this thing trying to tell me? And if I end up finding out that the creator of this thing is trying to tell me that some people are better than others, some people deserve to live and others don't.
Yeah, totally.
This world is shitty. And like, we should control the population because there's too many poors. Like, that's going to ruin it. It's going to ruin it for me. I'm not going to be able to appreciate the craft if I ultimately, you know, it's like the Watchmen movie when Zack Snyder made Watchmen. And you know, Zack Snyder, that was a brilliant, brilliant graphic novel. And Zack Snyder copied it almost frame by frame.
And yet still somehow fucked it up.
Yeah. And yet in the tiny, tiny little bits of ways in which he changed it, he made it so clear that he fundamentally misunderstood a story that was about, hey, we should be really careful about fascism. And here's how fascism can creep in and you don't even realize it. He was like, oh, my God, these fascists are really cool.
Yeah, like 1,000%.
Profoundly misunderstood, right?
Identifying and so, with the wrong characters.
Exactly,
100%, yeah.
So yeah, you know, I can't get away from it. That's always going to be in my rubric. It's always at the heart of it.
And I think that is fair because like ultimately I also feel the same way at the extremes of things.
Yeah.
I just have, I think, slightly more room in the middle.
Yeah,
where I'm less maybe... I have more just room for something to kind of wash over me and kind of just be like, wow, that was really interesting. And I don't know how to interpret it necessarily.
Yeah.
And I think I like that feeling more whereas for you, it seems more like it's like, or I sit with it more maybe. Whereas I feel like for you, it's more like, okay, that movie washed over me and now I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like fine. Like neither of those things I think are like wrong or bad. It's just a different, interpretation or a different approach. So
it explains why when we come to different positions on movies that are, you know, somewhere in that middle ground of, of like, they've got some good things and some bad things. And when we end up on different sides of it, I think this is kind of explains why.
Yeah, for sure. So now I want to talk about the other type of movie that I really love, because that's sort of one like the Coens I mentioned. I would put like, you know, one of my absolute favorite movies definitely of the last like 10 years is Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
Which is like a movie that I would say it's not quite like the Coens, because like that movie, once again, like I do think it's making a point. Mm-hmm. But the point is not obvious and can be discussed in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And then also the other thing that I like about it is like, of course I'm going to fucking like this movie. I love the pacing, the acting. It's funny. It's got a gun in it. It's about watching sports. Like, of course I'm going to love this fucking movie. Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
at the same time, like, you know, I mentioned the Adam Sandler movie Hustle or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's
where it's
right.
Like, where it's like, you know, I love Hustle, but not, you know, but I don't love, like, you know, I don't know, Miracle nearly as much. And the reason for that is because of the exact thing that you're describing. Because Hustle actually has something kind of interesting to say. It's doing it in this way that, of course, is going to appeal to me because I'm a sports fan and I totally relate to it on every level. Yeah. But the thing that it's trying to say is interesting, whereas the thing that Miracle is trying to say, even if like from a filmmaking standpoint they're really really similar, which I don't think they are, but you could make a case that they are, like the thing Miracle is trying to say is just fucking stupid and I don't care.
And I gotta say, I want to say too, I want to own this too, like I don't want to give the impression that I always sort of like am able to hold to this. Like I've got my spots too.
Always exceptions.
Like, I have a weak spot for anything to do with spying and espionage. Fucking eat it up. And you know that often, because a lot of that stuff will end up being pretty reactionary because it's usually from the perspective of the Western, you know, spies. And I can't help it. I love it. It's it gets me. It sucks me in.
Yeah, I fucking love the new James Bond movie, the newest one.
Me too.
I thought it was great.
Me too.
Yeah.
I also thought it was really good. And those are pretty reactionary as a
rule.
They
are. Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, it's like I can. The other factors can kind of overwhelm. Now it's still there. Like my normal rubric is still there. Mm-hmm. When I see a spy show that says something better and more interesting about it. Oh man.
Yeah,
that shit
totally.
Is always my 5 out of 5.
That like is I how recently... I, oh, sorry, please. Yes.
No, I was just going to say, I recently watched the miniseries, A Spy Among Friends, which is about the Kim Philby case. It's so good. So fucking tight. And is saying something really good and interesting about spying and spycraft and class in Britain and how that related to spycraft. So it was like, that just automatically sends me to 5. That's like my version of there's a gun in the movie. It's like there's a spy in the movie. There is mention of communism. Like I'm in, right? And then when the politics turn out good, I'm set.
Yeah. So I my version of that is cop movies, right? So you're gonna understand when I say this in a second. So like regular ass cop movies, I hate, right? But like a lot of the things about them come close to what I like. Like cop movies have a lot of elements that I like. They have guns in them. There's action. They open themselves up to be very stylish. Like, you know, like I love Heat. Heat's a great movie, right?
And
in fairness too, I don't think Heat is like necessarily that reactionary of a movie.
Yeah,
Heat
is kind of
just a movie that's trying to be pure style. Like or whatever, but what I really love is I like a movie that's sort of like that, like sort of has all the elements of like a movie like Heat, but what it actually ends up doing is there is a surefire way to make a good cop movie, and what you do
make the cops bad
is you put make the cops bad, but the best possible way to make a good cop movie that is actually like palatable to audiences that will actually like get made and get released and get critical acclaim is make a cop movie, put one cop in it that is trying to be a good cop, that is trying to do what your idea of what a good cop would do, what the like society says a good cop would do, and show how completely ineffectual it is and how fucked they are. So like,
like Training Day.
Training Day was the one I was thinking of. I would love to do Training Day. It's an amazing movie. It's so fucking good. It's somehow underrated, like how good it is. Like, that is like the clearest example of that. But there are other examples of this too. Like LA Confidential, I think is a really good example of it.
Yeah.
I think to an extent, The Departed is a good example of it, where it's like, it's like by the end of it, for the good cop to stay a good person, he has to compromise everything that he thought about being a good cop. You know what I mean? Like by the end of the movie, the good quote unquote cop is the one breaking all the rules that he thought were defining him as a good cop. So anyways, that dovetails, I think, nicely into what I want to end on, which is my other type of favorite movie. Probably even more so than the like opaque, like I can't understand it and it challenges me movie, which is the big, dumb, stupid, obvious, like just straight ahead, movie that is based and also, like from both an ideological standpoint and from like, this is amazing and entertaining to watch and I get to see things blow up standpoint.
Yeah.
So
it's why you liked Ready or Not so much.
I did love Ready or Not. And I think the best example of this movie, like the movie that I rate that is like, it's still a good movie, but like, it's a 5-star movie for me, and I know it's not a 5-star movie for everyone, is They Live, John Carpenter, right?
Yeah.
Because like, to me, They Live is basically a perfect movie. It is correct in everything that it's trying to say and obvious about it, right? Like, to the point where some of the things about it are almost a cliche now, like the sunglasses and the obey and the all that. But like, I love that shit. Like,
yeah,
that's awesome. It's funny. It's it is completely correct. All the rich people are all aliens that are trying to suck you dry. I love that. Great. And then the action sequences are really good. It has that amazing like 20-minute long fight sequence between Roddy Piper and Keith David. And then, and this is sort of a weird subtle thing, but it also has this just slight thing of being kind of stupid that I love. Like, like, I love that it is simultaneously a movie for like a guy who wears like a flat brim hat and a hoodie and like listens to Eminem and like smokes weed on his couch and watches this movie and is like, this fucking rocks. But it is like a communist movie, essentially. Like, it's like explicitly like class war movie. Which, and so like for me, I think like an example of, or like a movie like Django, and I don't mean Django Unchained. I mean Django, the original spaghetti Western that inspired it, where there is a scene where the main character reveals that the coffin that he has been dragging around him at all times actually has a minigun in it and pulls out the minigun and just mows down 100 KKK members that are competing on him.
That like, rocks.
That shit owns. Yeah. That is my favorite shit. Does. Like, and that is why, like, I think for me, like, the best movie of all time would have been a movie that never got made, sadly, which is, the planned Sergio Leone movie. He wanted to make a spaghetti war movie about the Battle of Leningrad, or maybe Stalingrad. Wow. I can't remember. that was like, he wanted to make a movie about, like, you know, I think I'm probably painting in some details that don't actually exist here, but he's thinking like, okay, Robert De Niro as an American journalist who enters the war covering it, but then is forced to get involved and like gets, you know, caught in between it happening or whatever. And like, and it's, you know, this like 3.5-hour like epic that is, you know, that we're going to just, you know, ADR all the dialogue for, and everybody can just speak in their own, native tongue or whatever. Like, that basically sounds like the best movie ever to me. And hypothetically, I think the movie that I would most like to see is like, if it could possibly exist, basically Shay, like Shay Part 1, but directed by Sergio Leone and like 15% more stupid. Like, that is to me, that it would be like the perfect movie. Is like,
I hear you.
You know, like the dialogue is dubbed. There's like a bunch of like dolly zoom shots of like, you know, like a Fidel like smoking a cigarette and laughing, and then the dolly zoom just like zooms in on his face while he's doing it. Shit like that. Like, that's the perfect movie in my mind's eye. And so like, you know, There is to circle this all back around to the Bong Joon-ho thing, which is why we kind of part of the reason why I did this. I'm going to cop to like my aesthetic preferences, right? Which is that I don't think at any point I struggled to understand those movies.
No.
Or like, you know, Parasite being the most obvious one. It's just that for me, the vibes were off. Yeah. It was a certain thing where it's like, it is patently, like, obviously a stupid thing that I'm like essentially saying that I like movies that are stupid. And I'm not I'm not advocating for Parasite to have been more stupid. Like, that's not what I'm doing.
No, I know. I actually would say what you're advocating for is Parasite to be less pretentious.
Yes.
Because I think what you're, when you're saying you like a movie to be a little bit stupid, what you're actually saying is that you want a movie to be smart enough to not be pretentious.
Yes.
And to not be so, like, to not be smug and to have a little bit of awareness that, like, you know, this world is fucking dumb and there's a lot of dumb shit and I'm dumb too. And yes. So here, I'm going to zoom in on Fidel's face while he, you know, laughs
like, smoking right? a cigar. Like, yeah.
It's that.
I hope everyone is picturing that like perfect in their mind.
I'm picturing it. I want to watch it too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like the thing with some movies, and it's not so. I love some pretentious movies. I will. You know, there's a lot of pretentious movies that I
deserved
will defend.
Pretentious. There's a difference between a deserved pretension and an undeserved pretension.
I totally understand why some people would say that about Parasite, which I don't even think is an overly pretentious movie by any means. But like to bring this full circle back to sort of what we were talking about with Matawan and It's a Wonderful Life and et cetera, is that like ultimately I don't think that any of those Bong Joon-ho movies were offering that interesting of a new take on something. Like I don't think they were particularly profound, although they were like in a lot of instances like a very accurate or good like representation of a very real thing that exists. The sort of combination of elements, it becomes, I think, as I said in the episode, like great tastes that don't taste great together.
Ultimately
like it's not that I have any problem with any one of the elements. It's just that by the end of the movie, when it hits me, I think to myself, like, I do understand what this movie is trying to say, and I didn't get anything out of it. Like,
yeah, it's not a satisfying combination of the things.
You know, because at least with Matawan, like, even though I criticized the ending, like, I fucking learned shit from that movie.
Right.
Which is great. Like, I felt like it deepened my understanding of the subject matter. I do not feel that way about any Bong Joon-ho movie. And in addition to that, I also feel like every Bong Joon-ho movie that I've seen, other than maybe, the one about the monster one. I can't remember the name of it. Other than that one, like the sort of canonical Bong Joon-ho movies that everyone talks about, they all leave me with the same feeling, which is that caring is pointless. It's pointless to try to do anything about anything.
And that comes around right there, comes back to what I said is at the heart of it for me, which is that at the heart of it is, what is this thing trying to say? More importantly, what is it actually saying?
Yes.
It may be trying to say one thing, but if it is leaving you with the distinct impression that it thinks something and you don't like that, like that's what really matters in a lot of ways at the heart of it. And I'm with you. Like, there's a lot of different types of movies that I can fuck with, right? I like a fun, rollicking, entertaining, dumb. You know, I mean, I would count as a 10 out of 10 movie Attack the Block, where
I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's great.
Oh god, it's phenomenal. Aliens attack in a kind of haphazard, weak ass kind of way, and they do so like in a shitty part of London where a bunch of poor racialized kids live. And so a bunch of poor racialized kids have to fucking slug it out with aliens. And it's just brilliant. It's perfect. It skewers so many things so well. And at the same time, it's just like kids fucking hitting aliens with bats. And it rocks. It's got that perfect, sweet combination of, I love what it is saying, but it's also not trying to say too much. And it's doing so very well and very entertainingly, right? And then at the far flip side of it is something like a Ken Loach, Wind That Shakes the Barley, where it's really heavy and deep and real, and there's a lot, and it's, you know, it's not fun, but it is immensely satisfying because you come away with just like a deeper sense of the things that matter and the things that we need to struggle with and how we struggle better with them and so on. So it's like, I can like very different types of movies, but for me, the kernel of it is always going to be, what is this thing saying?
And I will also, just as a final note, I want to mention one more movie that I know is like a total cliche at this point for like a man of my age to love and cite as one of his favorite movies. But I think it does deserve a mention here because I think it's a movie that like kind of perfectly hits the sweet spot on everything. It's not like my favorite movie, but it's really up there. And that is, of course, Children of Men. Alfonso Cuarón as like a movie that is like a really, really, really great combo of like digestible enough to be a sci-fi action movie that normal people would like while also being like a really, really like brilliant depiction of a future society.
Yeah.
And you know, weaving in like so many different like Children of Men is essentially a movie about like now. Like you watch it and you're like, how is this movie 20 years old? Like,
I know.
Because it's, I know. It's just, and the thing that I, not to just turn this into Children of Men, but the thing that is most brilliant about Children of Men is the way that it is, the way that it depicts what's happening on the margins. It's like, yeah. In, it's like so many scenes in that movie are, there is a scene and you're following this guy who's like a middle-class guy who gets caught in the middle of like a pseudo rebel revolutionary movement or whatever, but it is fundamentally from his perspective. And then you watch it and it's like in the center of every frame that's happening, and then on the margins of every frame is like what's actually happening.
Yeah,
like
totally
immigrants getting a fucking bag put on their head and then killed.
Yeah,
like yeah. It's so good. So it yeah is, I mean yeah. I mean I think through all those examples people kind of get a sense of what we're looking at, and yeah. And we'll kind of cap it off here, but what I will say it, just as a final thing is that basically like when it comes to trying to put a number on something, I follow basically sort of an amended version of the Roger Ebert rubric that he's talked about in the past, which is that you grade each movie on a curve based on what the movie's peers are.
Yeah.
Right. So his yeah. example would always be like, you're not going to compare fucking Fast and the Furious to like that Ken Loach movie that you just mentioned a second ago. Yeah. Right. Like yeah. there's a sense that like, okay, if Terminator 2 is a 5-star action movie, then Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift is like a 3.5-star action movie
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And by the yeah. same token, like, you know, if, I don't know, like Norma Rae is like a 5-star Union movie, then, you know, what's that fucking North Country yeah. is like a 3-star Union.
Yeah. Or yeah, whatever. Yeah. Aaron right? Brockovich. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. So,
yeah.
So I would say like, that's kind of how I look at things. And then I weave into that also like, look, did this hit? Were the vibes right for me?
Yeah.
And then yeah. also, in addition to that, what's the general consensus on this movie? Does it deserve reappraisal in one direction or another?
Yeah.
You know, so I am more likely to be like, you know,
You'll overcorrect. I do think you overcorrect.
And I will. Yeah. I cop to it. I yeah. cop to yeah. overcorrecting because somebody yeah. has to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Anything, any final thoughts before we sign
no,
off?
No, that's good. I think the people know that what I want in my movies is spies and communism. So
that's right. Perfect. We'll have to cover both of those things in a later episode. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.